Jason Light just put out the same message. We're good. I mean, how many years are we going to have to look at this? This roster, it doesn't stink.
Buccaneers fans, here he is, Ira Kaufman in the flesh. This time on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKepper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. All the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford. And Ira, I say in the flesh because you were not on the last podcast, which is a rare, rare thing. But Lee and I ran with it. And of course, we'll be focusing on you, Sage, in this podcast, which is always fun. How are you, Ira? Tell everybody that you're okay.
Doing well, guys. I apologize for not being on the last one. I'll make it up to you guys. But I listened to a little bit. It looks smooth. Lee, you were flourishing there very, very nicely. I'm in a great mood, guys. We went to see the Martin Scorsese movie, Killers of the Flower Moon. It's a solid B. De Niro, DiCaprio. 3.5 hours, Lee. 3.5 hours. About the same time as a bad Bucks game. 3.5 hours. But I made it through. No, I didn't see Barbie. And I haven't seen the Taylor Swift movie. But I'm in a good mood, guys. I did my treadmill last week. My annual treadmill test. They ran all these tests for me. The nurse practitioner, Lee, she made an amateur mistake. I mean, it's just something you don't do when you're taking somebody's blood pressure. And she wrapped the thing around my arm, and then she said Devin White, and the thing shot up 35 points. I mean, that can't happen, Lee. That can't happen. But this is going to be a rollicking podcast because I missed the last one, so I'm going to make up for it.
All right, Sage. Look, Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of the stadium, they've got their lifetime new limited powertrain warranty on all new vehicles. Unbelievable. Check it out at BillCurryFord.com, but they've got all great specials up there as well. You can still order a vehicle with their concierge assistance, and they will give you a $500 gift card. That's GM Sean Sullivan, our JoeBucksFan.com draft guru. He's going to hand you that gift card just for ordering a vehicle, and it's so easy. And no deposit. Check it all out at BillCurryFord.com. The Giant is coming. That's their nickname, and they're going to have it back in full force with their state-of-the-art futuristic dealership that will be grand opening soon. The finishing touches are coming right now, but they're open for business. Construction sale pricing is there. 561 vehicles I'm seeing on the website right now, Ira, to shop from. Fantastic. BillCurryFord.com. And Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Sage will be nailing down, hopefully this week, our next trip out to Big Storm for a road game. Should be fun. Sage hanging with the fans. Drinking. Are you still allowed to eat after you went to the doctor, Ira? Do you have the green light to hit the French fries?
Well, those tater tots are always on my mind, Steve. While I'm driving a Big Storm, that's what I'm thinking about. Kolsch and grabbing somebody else's tater tots. Those are what's on my mind.
Well, that'll get you in trouble at Hooters sometimes, but we'll leave it at that. Hey, Sage, look, BigStormBrewery.com, that's where you can see all the beers that they make, and they've got their locations, their tap rooms. They all have a little bit different menu, so check out all the menus. Clearwater, Amway Center in Orlando, Cape Coral, Odessa, which is right off State Road 54 on Success Drive, and, of course, Ybor City upstairs, and we have everybody in Ybor City and the business owners there in our thoughts. Terrible what happened there, of course, Sage. But Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Try a Bromosa this weekend. Their Tangerine IPA, BigStormBrewery.com. And we'll talk about our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration a little bit later. Ira, of course, fans know 24/7 they can call Florida's Elite Restoration. Anytime they have a disaster at their property, they'll get a free assessment. And they won't have to attack the insurance industry on their own. They'll have seasoned professionals at Florida's Elite Restoration with them to do that. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. All right, Ira, look, we got a lot of things to roll out for you. And first, I'm going to have to ask you here, state of the Buccaneers, Ira. The trade deadline passed. The Bucs stood pat. And on top of that, I have to ask you, Ira, the Bucs are now 3-4. When we last checked in with you, you had reassessed the team and thought that they were a 10-win team. So everybody wants to know, where is the Sage now that the trade deadline is finished and it's time for Ira to look ahead.
I'm not happy at all in the inactivity on the trade deadline. I'm just not. You're either a contender or you're trying to be a contender and get there. It reminds me, Lee, when the Lightning were lousy 10 years ago or something, they had a general manager, Jay Feaster. You know, the Lightning were very mediocre, and the hockey deadline came and went, and the Lightning did nothing. And I remember writing for the Tribune, Jay Feaster has a message for the rest of the NHL. We're good. And Jason Light just put out the same message. We're good. We don't need any help. And I know you're passionate about talking about your area that you think needs a lot of help. Lee, even a marginal upgrade, I think, sends the right message to this team that's in a tailspin.
Thank you.
Lee, nobody can deny that you're in a tailspin when you've lost 4 out of 5 and 3 in a row. Nobody. You know, 3 in a row at home to boot. They need help, Lee. They need help. And I'm just, I don't know. Now I'm getting a queasy feeling, Lee, that we're looking at 8 wins. I predicted 6. I think they'll do more than 6. But 8 wins, maybe win a division title. Who the hell cares about a division title if you're going nowhere after that? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And they're stuck in the middle, Lee. In a quarterback-rich draft, they're stuck in the middle. So they didn't accumulate draft capital in some kind of long-range effort to move up in the draft maybe and grab one of these, you know, 5 quarterbacks. I mean, Bo Nix would look very nice in a Buck jersey, Lee. He'd look very nice. Not to mention Caleb Williams and Drake May and Mike Penix. There's guys out there. They don't have one. They don't have one. And while Baker Mayfield is not bad and he's not awful, he's about as good as he's going to get. You know, there's a ceiling on Baker Mayfield. And I don't know. It just reminds me of when the Bucks used to go 6-10, leagues, maybe 7-9. And nobody cared. They were irrelevant. And I think that's where we are right now, unless things change markedly in the next month.
The Bucks are in a very, very interesting position in the sense that I don't think they know what they want. Now, I got a good guess what Bowles wants, but I don't think they know what they want. It's like they're not a good enough team to make a Super Bowl run, but they're a good enough team to possibly win a bad division. Okay, you might get lucky, you know, the bounce of the ball, all those cliches, maybe win a game or two, or maybe Mayfield gets real hot, I don't know. You know, if you stand pat, which the Bucks did, that doesn't help you in any way. It doesn't help you build up draft capital to go get a quarterback, or i.e., wink, wink, tank. Nor does it help you address glaring needs on your team if you really are serious about winning games in mid to late January, if you really are. And right now, I don't think the Bucks know what they are. I know Todd Bowles wants them to win. Todd Bowles wants to keep his job. You do that by winning. You do that by making the playoffs. But as an organization, what are they doing?
Very well said, Steve. The word of the day, and it's not a great word, is inertia. Inertia. They didn't do anything. Either way, and Lee, you know, laid it out. You either try to improve your team or you build towards the future. And Steve, I don't want you giving me some major speech right now when I finish my thought here.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming, Ira.
It's not coming, Steve, because I don't care about a division title if you're not a contender. And they're not a contender, Steve. And you better make a hell of a case that they are a contender. Because I don't see it. And before I turn this over to you, Steve, I'm going to go to my tried and true, my very trusty point. They need a quarterback to build around who's not 42 years old when they get him. And they don't have it, Steve, and they're not working towards it. And other teams, the Jaguars get Trevor Lawrence. Other teams get guys, and they develop them. And it's not happening in Tampa, Steve. It's not happening.
Real quick before Steve jumps in, and then the floor is Steve's. Two teams the Bucks will be battling potentially for a wild card. I know Steve's already written the story. They're still in the hunt for a wild card. I don't buy it, but it might happen. Two other teams decided to either fish or cut bait today. Those two, and both those teams, you could argue, prior to today, we're in a running for a wild card, And they need to, again, Fisher cut bait. Washington, Minnesota. Minnesota needed a quarterback. They went out and got one. Okay, he may not be great, but he's better than what they had. Washington, they decided to cut bait. They sold off assets to stock up on the draft. The Bucs didn't either. And sometimes no action is the worst thing you could do. Steve, the floor is yours.
Well, first of all, Ira, look, I'm a Bucs fan, and I understand you like the Bucs and you want to see them do well, but you're not a Bucs fan. You're not bleeding pewter and red. I have no interest in seeing the team lose. And a division title, yeah, it does mean something to me. The playoffs mean something. And I've watched too many decades of sports to know that, you know what? Sometimes weird shit happens in the playoffs. Somebody gets hurt, and next thing you know, you're playing a team with no quarterback. And all of a sudden, you know, you got a big game on your hands. And so I'm not in that boat. But let me say this. I'm going to carry Jason Light's water on this podcast here because there were really, really only legitimately four moves in the National Football League of any significance. And I think there were only like five or six total, but only four that were notable. The two Lee's talking about, Washington sold off their big name, yet, you know, not necessarily Pro Bowl player right now, players off the edge, Chase Young and Montez Sweat, and they didn't get a first round draft pick. And the Bills, right. The Bills got the Packers starting corner, Rasul Douglas there. And Lee mentioned the trade of Joshua Dobbs to clear the way for Kyler Murray to come back. So the league isn't exactly making a ton of deals. So I don't know what was really out there. I can't start slapping Jason Light around without knowing what was on the table or what wasn't on the table. But the end result is the end result. They have now gambled on what they have. And if they don't succeed with this group, if they don't turn it around and figure out a running game, then they deserve every dagger that's coming their way. But I can't throw it to them yet because I don't know if they really know that they're as bad as they are. As crazy as that sounds.
I understand that point. May I bring something up, Lee? Sure. And this is bothering me. This is bothering me. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but you tell me. Lee, when you're 3-4 and you've lost 4 out of 5, the first place I look is, you know, am I racked with injuries? And the Bucs are not. I'm sorry, they're not. When you look at what's going on around the league, they're not. They got Mayfield, they got Evans, they got Godwin, they got David, they got White, they got Winfield. They're not hurt where a guy's out for 2 months. I mean, a key player. Look at Buffalo with Milano. That was a killer. That was a crippler. He's the heart and soul of that defense. So, Lee, here's my point. You look at the injuries, well, the Bucs don't check that box. Lee, the very next box that anybody in this league would look at is the turnover differential. That's the next one to explain, we're not playing as well as we need to. How can we turn this around? Lee, they're leading the league. They're leading the freaking league at +8. They're on pace to, you know, finish +17, +18, whatever. Lee, that bothers me. That bothers me because it doesn't offer an easy answer why you're struggling. If you're -7, you know, you're saying, well, we're not getting enough takeaways and we're too sloppy with the ball. The Bucs are not sloppy with the ball. They've got 6 giveaways. Lee, 6. That's very good. Very good. They're not throwing the ball all over the place. They're not fumbling. So, Lee, that is very troubling to me that the first two things I look at for an antidote comes up empty and you've lost 4 out of 5. That might reveal a bigger problem.
We'll go back in the not-so-way-back machine to 2013. The Bucs were second in the league in takeaway differential. That was Greg Shiano's last year. They finished 6-10. Shiano was bounced. And the same thing happening then is happening now. No offense.
Lee, real quick, just for the psychos out there, the psycho fans who love all the data, Bucs were actually tied for third that year in takeaways, and they were 4-12. It doesn't change a lot, but I know folks will scream about that, so I figure I'd correct it.
Very good.
Steve, that was a case of the roster stunk. The roster stunk. This roster, it doesn't stink. They got 6, 8, 10 good players. Some of them very good. So that 2013 team, Steve, that was a terrible team.
Well, Sage, look, I don't know what you're trying to say here. I get you're saying they're underachieving. I think that's the core of what you're talking about here. And Mayfield, I know you're saying you're done with him. You need that big guy. Well, I'll say this, Ira, because I said it in the offseason. If Jason Light and the organization felt that they wanted to go for a big-name young quarterback, then they should have done it this year. I mean, the Panthers, we saw what they traded. The Bucs could have sweetened that pot just a little bit more, been a little bit more motivated and make sure they got with the guy they wanted. Maybe that was C.J. Stroud. I'm not saying they would have taken Bryce Young. But you know what? If you need that guy, go get it and don't wait. Now they're in a position this year where they've set themselves up to wait and play. I don't know what we're going to do. And, well, we have to rebuild, but we don't know who we're going to get. And every top quarterback is a crapshoot anyway, unless it's the rare, once every 10 years guy. And look at Justin Herbert anyway. Well, he's not exactly flying flags of victory, and he's got some of his share of holes in his game, as good as he is. So, I mean, I think they should have done it last year, and that will turn out to be a mistake if they, if they just cruise ahead this year and don't seem to have a good plan to get a quarterback and hope that they're close enough to get one. I agree with that. But right now, you're in it. You got it for the fans. You got to play to win.
Ivor, you mentioned how in 2013 the Bucs didn't have much of a roster. I won't argue with that. Offensively, you can make an argument the Bucs right now aren't a whole lot different talent-wise than they were 2013. Vincent Jackson was still in his prime. Doug Martin was coming off an excellent rookie season in 2012. And I wasn't a huge Doug Martin fan, but he looks like Gale Sayers compared to Rashad White. You can make an argument 2013, the talent on offense wasn't a whole lot different than now. Yeah, they didn't have a second receiver like the Bucs have with Chris Godwin, but the Bucs currently don't have a running back like Doug Martin. Now, that year, Doug Martin stunk. We knew Doug Martin was motivated when there was money on the line. Number one, as a rookie to make the team. Number two, to get another contract. He was motivated. He put up well. But I don't think the offense, talent-wise, Steve, am I crazy? I don't think talent-wise, this year's offense, 2013 offense, isn't a whole lot different.
I think Baker Mayfield is a hell of a lot more talented than Mike Glennon. And of course, they chose to get rid of Josh Freeman. So, I mean, he was obviously very talented. Somebody chose to do that. In Martin's defense, he only played 5 or 6 games that year. He got hurt. So that really screwed them up a bit. But I know what you're saying. I mean, with Vincent Jackson there and the tight end was very successful. Tim Wright, the rookie tight end, was very successful. Talented guy. Ended up moving on to the Patriots and was a big key in one of their Super Bowls. But I don't know. I mean, either way, this team should be doing a lot better.
I will say this, Steve, to your point about the division title, and while I don't share your passion that, that is a fantastic goal to accomplish in a terrible division, Lee, I will say, it's wide open. It's wide-ass open. Carolina's out of it. Atlanta is floundering. That is a terrible loss for the Falcons. Terrible. And, New Orleans, they look like an 8-win team, although they played very well last week. But they looked really bad against the Bucs at home 3 weeks before that. So it is wide open, Lee. I just don't put that premium on that division title if you're going to finish 8-9. I don't think that's anything to really get excited about.
This is a cautionary tale about poo-pooing a division title and deciding to tank rather than go for the title when you have a chance. In the throes of the lost decade, what do you think Bucs fans would have paid to have a division title?
I get you.
So who knows? I hate to say this because I don't want it to happen, but let's say there's a house cleaning this winter. When's the next time they're going to be in line for a division title? I don't dismiss what you're saying, Ira, but I also don't trivialize the division title.
Lee, I guess what I'm saying, Stevie, is 7 games in, I think one of our worst fears is in danger of being realized. And by that, I mean, Steve, they're in the great middle. The great middle. And there's nothing great about the middle. There's nothing great about it. It's a purgatory. It's a lousy place to be. They're not a bad team, but I just don't think they're a contender. And I really don't think you believe they are either, Dave. I really don't.
Wasn't that the Buffalo Bills for the longest time? 6 or 7 games, in the middle and they couldn't get that quarterback?
I mean, it's a real problem. And I'm not saying they should tank. I'm not saying that. I could go the other way, Steve, and say, you know, go get a running back. And you know what? Surprisingly, and it happens all the time, players that you think might fetch a high draft pick, and you turn around and some team gets them and they give up like a fifth-round pick, and you're saying, that's it? That's all it cost? Sometimes that surprises you. It happens all the time.
Well, Chase Young kind of opened up my eyes that he was had for a third-round pick. Like,
Yeah.
Acknowledgement
of a mistake by Washington, you know, in retrospect.
Well, he's had a lot of injuries. I mean, that's really the core of this, his struggles, I think. And, you know, they have a new owner, and they're going in a different direction, and it looks like they're pulling the rug out from Ron Rivera, and, you know, and then that's that. But, Ira, as far as the team goes, just a little different perspective, the Falcons. If you were a Falcons fan this morning, would you be freaking out that they didn't move, let's say, Kyle Pitts for a first-round pick so they could go get a quarterback next year and make sure they get one? Because they've got plenty of pieces to move, the guys they could move for a first-round pick or quality picks. Would you be mad as a Falcons fan and say, hey, we're 4-4, but we're not going anywhere. We don't have a quarterback. Let's get rid of Pitts. We'll get a first-round pick. We'll be in position to jockey next year and get our guy.
Well, I understand your point, Steve, but I think your premise is wrong. I don't think there's a way in the world, not in God's green earth, Lee, are you getting a first-round pick for Kyle Pitts. That's not happening. I'm sorry. It's not. I don't even know if the Raiders could get one for Devontae Adams at this point. As great as he is. Probably not. You know, maybe a two. Steve, you'd be surprised how low the thing would be on Kyle Pitts. But you're right. The Falcons fans, they don't know what's going on. I think Heinicke's going to get that job. I think Heinicke's better than Ritter. Steve, I think you think that. I think you believe that also. But he's not the long-term answer, but I think he's better. And I think if they go to Heinicke with their schedule, even though the Bucs' schedule I think is very favorable down the stretch, so is Atlanta's. I think if Atlanta made the move to Heinicke, I would pick the Falcons to win the division.
I got to say, Sage, if you don't think Kyle Pitts would pull a first-round pick, then I can't help you. I mean, he's a monster at 23 years old. Devontae Adams, he's came out with Mike Evans. He's over the hill, almost.
Come on, Stevie. You're the guy that always calls things up on your screen. Devontae Adams didn't have a great year last year? I mean, it was last year. I mean, you know, who's getting him the ball? Jimmy Garoppolo? Are you kidding me? I agree with you about Kyle Pitts. I think he's been an underachiever. Maybe he's been injured. I don't see what Kyle Pitts has done in the pros. Steve, I don't see it. I don't see it.
All right, Sage. All right. I don't know. But we are not going to argue Kyle Pitts on this podcast. We'll leave it at that, Ira. Look.
Steve, I want to know why after a year and a half of terrible offensive football, terrible, a year and a half, not three games, you know, 24 games, 25 if you count the playoff game. Terrible offense. Steve, new coordinator, new quarterback, changes on the O-line. What's going on, Lee? I mean, how many years are we going to have to look at this?
Well, I would say it was 24 games of bad football, bad offense, because I'll give you this, Ira. They haven't played a good offensive game in the Western Hemisphere since Bowles took over. Now, the game in Munich, that was a pretty good offense. And oddly enough, that was Rashad White's best game. He looked like he was something that game. Like, wow, they got something here. And they looked pretty good on offense that day. But that's the only game. You're right. That's the only game. And you know, I've been on social media a lot today because fans are freaking out. You know, why don't they make a trade? Why don't they make a trade? Get this running back. Get that running back. Get this pass rusher, whatever. And from the comments on Joe Buck's fan, from the social media posts that I've seen from fans, they think, okay, you changed from Leftwich to Canales, you changed the quarterback, you changed the quarterback coach, you changed the running back coach. You have a different offensive line for the most part. What's the common denominator?
Todd Bowles.
Yeah, Steve took the word out of my mouth. And fans think it's some kind of hex or or you know, voodoo, or command from bulls. Like, this is the way we're going to do things, and as a result, you have a lackluster offense. Do you think fans are onto something there, Ira, or is that just
no? I think fans do think that way. The predominant majority of them. I think you're right, but I don't agree with it, Lee. I don't think Bowles is much of a meddler on the other side of the ball. I take him at his word. He certainly didn't meddle with Byron Leftwich, much to his detriment. And Lee, this is his handpicked guy, Steve, his handpicked offensive coordinator. Nobody picked him other than Todd Bowles. Bowles picked Canales. And I don't think he picked him to meddle with them. So, Steve, I don't think that's right. Say what you want about Bowles, you know, time issues, clock management, well, whatever. Too many penalties. I don't think you can accuse him of meddling too much in the offense, Steve.
No, but you know what? I have an important point about that, Sage, and I'm excited to hit you with it. I'm playing a Mr. Defender of the Bucks here in this podcast. I guess it's a different role for me. But you know what? I still have great love for last year's opening day, Leonard Fournette running the ball down the Cowboys' throat, more than 6 yards a carry, 21 carries or so for 130 yards. And that actually happened last season. They also got sort of fooled late in the season when they put up, I think it was 4 touchdowns on the Panthers, and Mike Evans had that big breakout day finally. I mean, there were a couple of lights in the tunnel there, and I think, you know, 20 points in the first half or so against the Bengals. So it wasn't a complete washout, but it is this bad stuff we're seeing. And, you know, nobody wants to talk about Harold Goodwin, who is the run game coordinator. That's one of his titles. I mean, that's not very good. Tom Moore, everybody loves him. Genius offensive assistant. Well, what's he doing? Maybe he's just lost his fastball or nobody's paying attention to him. But they've got to figure this stuff out, Ira. One thing, before I hit this question about Bowles and coaching, Rashad White, he's been so much better in the passing game these last 2 weeks, and he's always been good at it. And I actually looked it up, Ira. He's on pace to set the NFL single-season record for catch percentage. That's how good he is with his hands. And clearly, obviously, being in the right place as far as targets to catches. So that's pretty incredible. I think part of what happened with the running game, their decision, not that I agree with it, but to not go get a running back, is they looked at like, man, we need to use Rashad White more in the short passing game. That means he's got to be on the field. And maybe we can make up for some of his crappy running by throwing him 10 balls a game and doing a lot of what Brady did last year, throwing all those balls to Fournette for short yardage. Maybe we can get more out of that. But if we get a new running back, we're going to have to take White off the field more. And we don't see a guy who can catch the short passes for 8, 9, 10 yards. I don't know. Do you think there's part of that there, guys?
I do. That might be the best part of their offense right now, Lee, is the quick, you know, hitch pass to White and get him out in space. And he's good about making people miss. That thing about catches to targets, Lee, I think last year was 50 out of 57. I mean, that's a phenomenal statistic for Rashad White as a receiver. And he's doing very well in that regard. I just think the lack of that running game, Lee, it's really showing up in the red zone where the team is struggling. And I want to make one point. I'm going to ask you guys a direct question. Steve likes to lay down some nuggets. I got one, Lee. I got one. I think I'm right about this. Lee, 7 games played. 7. How many touchdowns has your Buccaneers scored in the opening quarter? 7 games.
One, correct?
I believe it's one.
Yeah.
That is totally unacceptable. Even the Buffalo game, Steve, which I haven't talked a lot about since I missed the last podcast. Say what you want, Steve, but in the middle of the fourth quarter, they had 10 points, the Bucs. They had 10 points. So I don't want to hear about some kind of miracle finish and how they could have won the game with the pass interference. I picked the Bills to win big. And to me, it was 24-10, middle of the fourth quarter. I never thought the Bucs were going to win that game. Steve, they can't score in the first quarter. They're always behind. It's just not fair to a defense that's playing pretty well.
Yeah, you're right, Ira. I kind of wrote that today. You know, I know there's a lot of people that are all bent out of shape about the third down defense. But look at the points scored against them. They're one of the best in the league. I think they're 5th best, maybe 7th best. They're certainly in the top 10 in points allowed per game.
And that's right.
So I always look at that. I'm not excusing the third down defense, but the defense as a whole is not a problem. Do they have areas on defense that need to improve? Absolutely. Third down defense and the pass rush. Gee, there's a broken record for you, the pass rush. What do you know? But yeah, I agree with you, Ira. It's the offense that's dragging this team down. The point totals that the Bucs are holding their opponents to are not, nor should they be, insurmountable totals.
Absolutely. And Steve, I believe they forced four punts from Buffalo in their final four possessions. What more do you want from the defense? Well, you know, Buffalo scores a lot of points.
I've, you know, been throwing up red flags on the defense. I think they're saving the team from getting blown out. But they've got some issues there, like Lee said. Sage, that beautiful palace you have over there in Newport, Richie. Everybody wishes they could have such a thing, but you know what to do if there is a problem over there with mold, fire, storm damage, whatever it might be. You call Florida's Elite Restoration immediately, 24/7. Before you call your insurance company, you call them, and they'll give you a free evaluation of what's going on at the property. And if you need their services, they're going to fight for your money that is yours with your insurance company to get everything restored and eventually repaired. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. That's what they specialize in. They've got decades of experience on the insurance side of the business, so they know how to deal with the corrupt practices in the industry to make sure you get what's yours. When you have that disaster, you need a family-owned, trustworthy local company, Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Get there today. If you call them and need help, mention Ira Kaufman, Joe Bucks fan, the Sage, whatever you want to say. And when they come out and give you that free evaluation afterwards, if you need their services, they'll give you $500. Maybe that's money for your deductible, or maybe it's just cash back. Florida's EliteRestoration.com.
Well, what do you think about this, Ira? I've mentioned pass rush. There's a couple of things on this team that just spooked me about what may or may not happen in January. First one is, it's pretty clear the Bucs decided they're good at running back. Otherwise, they would have got one. That's my conclusion. They think they're good at running back. If they can't develop a run game, doesn't that look pretty bad on the coaching staff, number one? Number two, if I'm the Glazer family, and I see all the investment the Bucs have made, their team has made in the past 3 or 4 years, let's rattle it off here. Devin White, number 5 overall pick, drafted largely because he could rush the quarterback. Hasn't put quarterback on his rear end in 13 games. That's one of Steve's favorite stats. He's not wrong.
14.
Okay, it gets better. Joe Tryon Shoyinka, first round pick. Logan Hall, second round pick. Vita Vea, first round pick. Shaq Barrett, major free agent expense. If I'm the Glazer family, I look at all that investment and the defensive line and linebackers. Do I not start asking questions why these guys are not being developed?
Fair question, Lee. Each one maybe is an individual story. Shaq Barrett with the Achilles, the personal tragedy. Steve, I just can't figure out this Devin White and the way he's being used. I mean, Steve, did he forget how to blitz? Is he no longer effective on the blitz? Does he no longer rush the passer like he used to? I'm not asking for 9 sacks, Steve. That's unreasonable for an inside linebacker. I set that standard. I'm not going to hold him to that. But he's no factor. Steve, he's no factor. And this year, including that Buffalo game, I think the pass rush has been a problem. I don't think it has been, Lee, until this season. I think the numbers have been pretty good. You know, they get their 45, 47, 48 sacks. They're top 10. This year, I don't like the pass rush. Shaq Barrett and Devin White, you know, they got to step up. They got to make a difference because I can't rely on JTS. I can't. Who else you got, you know, as a pass rusher? Winfield once in a while, but you don't want to overdo it. He's so valuable in the backfield. It's a problem. The pass rush, Steve, for the first time, I think, since Bowles arrived, it's an issue.
Well, I mean, I can't call out Vita Vea for not developing. I mean,
you're right. I was just saying, you know, there's a first-round pick. And by the way, that's why I left Kansas off the list, because he's only played a couple games. That's not fair to lump him in with everybody else.
But I was going to say, it's a fair question. At the end of the season, Lee was talking about January, to evaluate all those guys collectively and see where they are and if maybe they didn't develop them or they didn't plan it right. I don't know. It's not a strength of the team right now. Let's put it that way. The edge rush is, you know, Joe Tryon Shoyinka is not it. We all know that. You know, can't see. Todd Bowles had said that after the Bills game, he said it after the Falcons game, but he said one more game of rust, and this was the game coming up against Houston was what he pointed to on the team radio network for can't see to sort of be full strength and break out. So we'll look forward to that. And I have no doubt, Ira, that Bowles knows how to dial it up, but Devin White, he's just not the same player. I mean, it's obvious. It's too many games, and you know, maybe he's got a couple of hair on fire games left in him, especially as his contract chase gets closer later in the season, but he's just not the same player, and that's just the reality right now. But Ira, I got to ask you this. This is an important question. This is huge. It needs your sage wisdom. Everybody can take a deep breath now. Get off BillCurryFord.com. Stop shopping for a vehicle for 5 minutes. I'm sorry, Sean Sullivan, GM. Pay attention, because this came out, Ira, on the Buccaneers radio network, and it was shocking. Now, Ali Marpet is a new co-host there, and they had Luke Gedeky on for an hour. I had no idea how, first off, I have to say, I had no idea how fascinating Luke Gedeky is as a human being. His whole story and going to school to study chemical engineering and this whole, I mean, I had no idea. So good for Luke Gedeky, interesting guy. But Gedeky was on there, and he was talking really high-level offensive line stuff with Marpet. And Marpet mentioned that it seemed like the Bills knew the snap counts. That they were just way too fast off the ball. And in Marpet's eye, he said, I saw it as them knowing the cadence. And Gedeky not only agreed that the Bills knew the cadence, he said, quote, we had like a tell or something, quote. And he said, watching the film, they literally were like a split second before the ball was even snapped. They started their rush. He said, you could see it on the film. You couldn't catch it with the naked eye. And he said he had a long chat with Tristan Wirfs about it. And Wirfs had said he had never felt or been experienced that kind of thing in football where the defense was all over them as if they knew what was happening. Now, that is some telling stuff right there. If you think about it, that they couldn't correct it by the second quarter, by halftime, by Todd Bowles stepping in. And, you know, getting with Canales, maybe even calling a timeout and saying, what the hell is going on here? Walking over to that offensive side of the ball saying, they know the snaps. I know what I'm looking at. Ali Marpet is seeing it on television. And this is, and he's talking about it the next day. The All-22 wasn't even out yet. Ira, I think this is the biggest red flag of the season, how something like that could happen and no adjustments are made in the game. Your thoughts from both of you.
I had the same exact reaction as you did, which is, Lee, if Wirfs and Gedeky are coming to the sidelines and telling the offensive line coaches what they feel is going on and putting the Bucs at a total disadvantage, where's the adjustment, Lee? You know, you give it one quarter. All right, maybe it's a fluke. Maybe it's one possession. Now it's a pattern. And your own players, including your best player, Wirfs, is telling you what's going on out there, and it continues all game? That is a black mark on this coaching staff.
I learned in grade school football you change up your cadence periodically in the middle of a game, in the middle of a drive. Forget a quarter. Forget a half. That's just not – if I learned that when I was 11 years old, I don't know what to say what's going on with NFL coaches. But, I mean, maybe I've missed something, but did Gedeky say that they went up to the Bucs coaches during the game and said this something's weird is going on, they're reading us? I may have missed that part.
He didn't say that in my story, no. He didn't say that.
Okay. Well, that I give a little bit of a pass to the assistant coaches. Now, I can't remember where I read this, where I heard this, and it could be complete and total BS. Someone suggested that Hainsey might have been tipping pitches with his head movement. I don't know if that's accurate. It could be. I don't know that, but that's what I had read or heard somewhere. But just change your cadence up once in a while. I don't even know if they told Mayfield that, like, hey, man, these guys are reading something. But they should have said something to someone, whether it was Mayfield, whether it was to Canales, whether it was to You know, our buddies, the offensive line coaches, somebody should have said something. But at the very least, like I learned this in grade school football, you change up your cadences during the drive. Because otherwise, defensive linemen will get a read on you, and they'll get a step on you at the snap.
You're right, Lee. And Steve, I'll throw this out at you. Even if Gedeke and Wirfs didn't say anything directly to the coaching staff when they came back to the benches, Steve, shouldn't the coaching staff have noticed from the sideline? This must be totally focused on the line of scrimmage. Shouldn't they have noticed that the Bills are getting an advantage after the first quarter? It hits you in the face. Maybe we can't tell off television, but Steve, they're right there on the field. Shouldn't they have noticed?
Yeah, absolutely, Ira. There's no other way to say it. That's what they're paid to do. They've got guys watching in the sky. They're looking at images. This is still a big coaching staff, even though Todd Bowles shaved off a couple of guys from Arians' staff. Arians had the biggest staff in the league. You know, even Mayfield saying, hey, what's going on here? Do I need to change up? Their get-off is incredible tonight. It's just a red flag all around, and I have to hang it on Bowles, who's watching the offense as well. He's got to be communicating with everybody, and you never see Bowles. I don't see it. I don't see him talking to offensive players. He never talked to Brady. I don't see him talking to Baker Mayfield. I don't like it. It doesn't mean that having a chat with Mayfield once in a while during a game makes a difference, but you know, you've seen that from coaches, defensive coaches through the years. They talk to their quarterbacks, and I don't like that from Bowles. It's just a personal thing.
I understand, Steve. He seems a little detached on game day. I don't know who he's talking to in the headset, but Steve's right. He doesn't have a lot of interaction with players. I'm with Steve on this one with the red flag, Lee. It doesn't reflect well on the coaching staff at all.
I can't gloss over the fact that the players didn't mention it to at least Mayfield. You could say Mayfield should have been picking up on it, but why didn't Getty and or Wirfs come to Mayfield like, hey, change the count once. You know, we'll catch him outside. We'll catch him outside. Change the count. Change the cadence. Go to a hard count. To me, that is, like I said, I did that in freaking when I was 11, 12 years old, grade school football. We knew that. What the hell? Yeah.
I mean, just for the sake of the what Gedeke said, he never said he didn't tell anybody. He never said he did tell coaches during the game or talk about it in the huddle or anything like that. He just mentioned a specific long conversation with Wirfs after the game and how much they saw of it on film. You know, who knows what was going on there. But it's, I think, Ira, it's just fair to say it's a failure all around that I don't like. And I'll say this for Lovie Smith. I'll dare to bring Lovie Smith on the podcast. I don't want Lee's going to throw things. I'll say this. Lovie Smith was always in Jameis Winston's ear. They clearly had a good relationship, even though you had Dirk Cutter there, who was a very seasoned offensive coordinator, a guy who had brought multiple teams to top 10 offenses. Lovie had no problem going to talk to Jameis, getting a pulse of the game and all that stuff. And he developed well in his first year. So I mean, I got to throw one there for Lovie. I don't really understand Bowles, his complete disconnection from the offense during games.
You can say the same thing about Raheem and Shannon. Maybe Shannon was too involved, but Raheem was, you know, there with Josh Freeman all the time.
Yep. Interesting stage look. All right, we're going to get out of here, Ira. We're going to come back with a short predictions episode for this big game in Houston, because it really is a big game. The whole thing could change the whole damn season with a win here. God forbid they lose to Houston, who's not a very good team that just lost to Carolina. It might be Kyle Trask time, which would be a whole different animal here, Ira. But you got a final question for us, Ira, or a final thing you want to talk about or say? We'll leave it to you.
I got one for both you guys, but I'm waiting on Ira.
All right, Ira, you know what? You think about that for a second. Lee's going to drop a final question on us. Go ahead, Lee.
I almost hate to say this because he's one of my favorite Bucs players, has been for a long time. Did you get the sense Thursday night against the Bills that Levante David is finally starting to show his age?
I didn't notice that in particular. Lee, he had a streak of great games. And to be fair, I didn't particularly notice him against the Bills, where Josh Allen did hurt them a little bit with his legs, as he's going to do to everybody. I think it might have just been the particular opponent and the fact that you always got to keep tabs on Josh Allen. I don't think it'll be the same way with C.J. Stroud. So I'm expecting a nice bounce back game from Levante David, who's been one of the Bucs' best players this year, Lee. So
Yeah.
Unless he's kind of the least of my concerns at this point.
Yeah, just to answer it quickly, I don't think so. I mean, one, I'm going to give him a little slack as a 33-year-old on the short week on the road. But he had 14 combined tackles that I just looked that up. That was his biggest number of the season. So, and a tackle for loss. So, I mean, it wasn't like he disappeared off the stat sheet.
Well, I kind of got spooked because it was sort of like the Ryan Neal syndrome. What I mean by that is I saw too many highlights to my liking of the Bills making plays that Levante either had to cover up for somebody or was out of position. That's what spooked me. And that's why, you see Ryan Neal, he's always chasing somebody. So that either tells me he blew the coverage or he's covering for someone, one of the two.
Right. I will say this, Lee, overall, not so specifically number 54. I didn't like the tackling Thursday night. You can't let those five-yard passes go 16 yards. They'll kill you. They'll just chew you up. And I saw some lack of hustle at times. Which is a little troubling, but their tackling in general, and this is going back a few years, Lee. I don't think their tackling is a point of honor on this team. Besides David and Winfield, Lee, I think they really struggle with the angles they take and the failure to wrap up. I think it's been a problem.
Interesting.
All right, Ira. Well, you know what? One thing that sticks in my craw is if you really watch the film, sometimes in each game you see some unwilling tackling. And we saw it in that last game from Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis, and I hate it every time. It just makes me sick. Doesn't mean they don't tackle, but sometimes they're just not willing. And I don't like that. David, as a point of note, Ira, I know you love these nuggets. David now has 988 career solo tackles. So potentially, if he had a monster game, he could hit that 1,000 mark this week, which would put him in some really, really rare air, and which is pretty cool because he'll definitely hit it this season. All right, Sage.
He's building an interesting Canton resume. I will say that. It's very intriguing.
And there's one man who could do it, who could get him through, who could beat down the walls for Levante David.
Steve, we're coming back later in the week. We will discuss the upcoming Houston game. I think this is a tough call, Lee. For me, the Buffalo game was not a tough call. This is a tough call. Lee, get your thoughts together. We'll be back later in the week to let our listeners know what we think. Will the Bucs slump to 3-5 with a fourth straight loss, or will they end this bleeding and get back to 500?